Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Rabbi.
How are you? How you doing?
Good morning.
Is it Josh?
Hi.
How you doing there? I heard Jim and Cal and Doug. Everybody doing well?
Good. Hey, Jim.
What's that? All right, so let's start. We're going back to Kahelis, right? We're picking up where we left off 3 weeks ago, actually. So we're in chapter 7, verse 15 is where we're up to. And Doug, you have the English in front of you?
I do.
Okay, so we'll get to the next verse. Just want to see how they translate the last word. Okay, so let's read. We're going to read a few verses. And keep in mind where we left off. We were talking about how a person can't correct something after death. That was verse 13. That was one of the explanations. Let's just say. And whoever has the, just put your mute buttons on, because again, we're starting to get the feedback again. If you put on your mute button, that'd be good. Let's just see. All right, so let's take 15. So it reads as follows. All I have seen in my days of futility, There are the righteous that are destroyed in their righteousness, meaning they're well, the righteous that they're being destroyed. And then there's the wicked that are given length of days in as they remain wicked. So it sounds on the surface that he's saying that this seems to be an injustice. And what adds to that is that he calls it the days of his futility. He also says, in the beginning, I've seen everything. And things that you wouldn't expect. That would seem to be. And he goes on and he says, do not be overly righteous. And do not be overly wise. Why should you be destroyed? Now, what's the last word he has there, Doug, on that verse in 16?
This one says, why should you bring desolation upon yourself?
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Then he goes on to the same theme, and he says, do not be too wicked. Right, he just said, don't be too righteous, don't be too wise, and don't be too wicked, and do not be a fool. There he doesn't say too much. There he says even the quality. You see, he does not say, don't be a fool too much, like he said with the other three. He said, do not be righteous too much. Do not be overly wise. A different word than too much. Overly is different. Then he says, do not be too wicked. But then he says, by being foolish, do not be a fool. Why should you die when it's not your time? And he moves on to 18. And he says, it is better, it is good, that a person should grab on to this and all to this and also to this. And he shouldn't release his hand. Right? Actually, the way you should read it is better, it is good that a person should seize this, and also from this, a person should not let his hand go. That means to say that he should grab onto one thing, but also not abandon the other thing, whatever those two things are. For the one who fears God will bring out, will have success in all of them. The one who fears God, he'll bring out success in all of them. Okay. Okay, so let's stop there. So it's interesting. He says on the first verse, all I've seen in my days of futility, there are the righteous that they expire, they're destroyed in their righteousness, and then there's the wicked who have long lives. And again, I'm getting feedback, so whoever doesn't have the mute button, please put it on. Everybody have the mute on? Okay. So what does he mean over here? What does he mean that there's a couple of different explanations. So Ryu Swarno. He says, all I have seen in my life, and that is, he says, that's measure for measure, both for good and for evil. And in this manner, I have seen the following expression of this trait that God upholds. He says, as a matter of fact, he says earlier, when he talks about God's methods, he says, God does not give more punishment than is warranted. And also part of that design is that when God punishes, he gives the punishment that is from the same character of the sin. And that, of course, we said before, that's to alert the person to look into that area. So when God's going to correct the person, first of all, he's only going to correct the person that he loves, that King Solomon says in another place. Because what does that mean? God only corrects the one he loves. It means he only corrects those who are worthy of God's love. And who's the person worthy of God's love? As a person who's seeking to live the best life. So he's looking for correcting himself. But if a person is not seeking to live the right life, and he's not looking to correct himself, so it'll be futile for God to do anything to correct the person if the person won't listen. Because God does not do futile activities. Okay. So now he goes on and he says, his commentary on this verse, on 15, he says that, again, God works with measure for measure. And an expression of this, he says, there is a righteous person who is destroyed in his righteousness. Why? On account of any sin that he has not repented from. And you cannot say that his righteousness or his merits will save him from a punishment. Because one mitzvah does not extinguish a sin. And he says this another place in the Torah too, that God doesn't take a bribe. So Swarno says over there, Rabbi Mann pointed this out to me. He says the identical thing, that a person can be righteous, but if he has one sin, that could be something which warrants his expiration. And God does not look at the rest of his life that was righteous and that was perfect, and using that as a means to save him from the sin. Because all the righteousness and all the good acts that the person has done, no matter how great he is, if he has a sin in a certain area, the righteousness from the other area is not going to extinguish the sin. It means to say that if a person has a flaw, so that flaw is only removed by repenting, by changing his character in that one area. It doesn't matter that he's very righteous in another area. That does not obscure the problem that he has right now.
Rabbi?
Yes.
So then, that would seem like it reaches the conclusion that no one can make it. That only the absolutely perfect person can make it.
Yeah, he actually says that in a few more verses. Take a look. 20. For there's no man that is righteous in the land that does good and doesn't sin.
Right, but so let's take, just for a second, I don't want to pull us off track, but if that verse says that, which we agree on, nobody's fully righteous, but you just said that anybody who is completely righteous, but they've got one sin, that the rest of their righteousness isn't going to offset that, that means that in order then to not be, you said expired, I assume that means died or not have a place in the world to come, that you would have to have corrected that sin, but if you corrected that sin, you'd be perfect. But verse 20 says there is nobody who's perfect, therefore nobody makes it.
Well, no, what happens is that a person can die in his righteousness. That means to say he did one sin that he didn't repent from, and therefore he was killed. He doesn't lose his next world unless it was a real heinous crime. So we're fine. It's true in verse 20. No man is righteous in the land that does good and doesn't sin. That means that there are, and Swarno says this later on, that even the righteous people, sometimes an emotion pulls them and they get off track. So you try to get back on track. But there could be a time where a person is going to sin. He didn't repent. So then, even though he's very righteous, he's going to die earlier. He's going to die, I guess early means that, or he'll die in the middle of doing the sin. Whatever the point is over here, that he sees a righteous person that dies, that means to say that even though he's very righteous, but if he did one sin that we don't know about, that could explain maybe why he's impoverished. He didn't die. He got punished another way. So the person, we're not saying that the person dies without sin, unless he repented before he died. Either way can go. So we're okay. People are, it's practically impossible for a person not to sin. The Talmud only says there were four people who never sinned. All right. So therefore, for the rest of us, which is pretty much everybody, we make a mistake. Maybe we spoke wrong to somebody. Maybe we weren't exactly honest in filing our taxes. Wherever the expression of a corruption comes in the person's nature, so they have to atone for it. If they don't, they'll be like this person here that will be righteous. He'll die. And God will take care of the person, and he'll equal things out after death or whatever takes place. But the person can die without, repenting. And that's why he is dying, we're told here.
And when we talk about here about sin, and in verse 20 where it says, there's no righteous man or two does good, sin is not. Are we talking about halakhic or philosophical or both?
Both. Anything where a person is going against what his mind knows to be true. And he's following his instincts. So following the instincts either philosophically or even halakhically. So it's good, right?
What do you mean it's good?
it makes sense what we're saying, our conclusion.
I understand what you're saying.
Okay. Okay.
I don't like it, but I understand what you're saying.
Oh, you don't like it? What don't you like about it? I can't let that one go.
I'm sorry?
I can't let that one go. That statement, I can't let that go.
Well, I'm trying to figure out. It almost seems in some ways like a system where you can't win. So there's only four righteous people on earth.
No, not righteous.
I'm sorry. Take it back. I think you said there's only four people who never sinned.
Right.
So therefore, essentially everybody does.
Right.
Which means, if I'm understanding this right, your life's going to be cut short by some amount.
No. It doesn't mean for every sin that a person does that he loses his life. That's not true. We don't know when God does that. King Solomon here is just saying that he is seen in certain cases. You could live a very full life, and if you did certain sins, they're minor type of things. God knows how to weigh it. And also, Rabbi Chaim once explained that a person, a sin could be done by two different people, but one gets more severe punishment than the other, maybe because it was premeditated. Whereas when a person is just overcome by an emotion, he sins, as Rabbi J explained, he's not judged as harshly. Then there's people who should have known better, like one of the commentaries here says, and so therefore if he should have known better, he's held to a higher standard. So God knows how to weigh. And again, we have no idea in which cases a person is cut short or not. But what King Psalms is describing here is, you see somebody who's very righteous and then he dies short. Like, your expectations don't seem to be met. That means that the person had a wrong concept as to what should happen to a righteous person, or he was evaluating him wrong. So that's what King Solomon is trying to bring out. But it's not a situation where you can't win. God gives us a soul, and we have the ability to live a great life here and to have the next world. And our next world is taken away only for very, very serious crimes. And life here, again, We don't know when it's being cut short or whatever, but again, it will be just. We should be sure that it is just, because it's all being run by God. So we shouldn't have a question about the justice of it. But the fact also, for example, that Yom Kippur, you know, is a day of repentance, that's built into the Jewish calendar. Evidently, God knows that it's necessary for the entire nation to be repenting once a year, because they need it every year. People, this is just the way we're built. It's necessary to have both the components, the intelligence and the emotions, and the emotions are going to get us, but God still says that is the best system for us. And hopefully after 70, 80, 90, 100 years, you know, maybe we'll live to 100, 200, whatever it is we live to. So hopefully that the instincts will have they do loosen their grip as we get older. We do see things clearly as long as we stay on the track of learning, and we can reach, you know, our potential. But a person who repents, you know, you should a person repenting every year, so it's for everybody, not just the Jews. It's a new year for everybody. And what's also true is that although maybe four people never sinned, this person still has free will. And that's never taken away. The person really wants to, they can hold themselves back from all sin. You have the free will. That is not compromised at all. So there's no area of injustice. Okay.
Rabbi, can I ask a question?
Sure.
I understand that, you know, we'll sin in our lives whether you're righteous or not, but I don't understand 16 where it says don't be overly righteous or excessively wise. I just don't understand how those can be bad things.
Okay, so we'll take that now. But let me just finish the Sforno, where he says that he even sees the wicked people that live long lives. He says, and this is because the wicked person is being paid back by God for some good that he did. And all of his wickedness will not close the doors against that goodness that he has to rightfully be paid. He did something good. God's system is 100% just. Okay, so he'll get a very long life as payment for some good that he did. And therefore he says, therefore it is fitting that a person should watch the commands of God without addition and without subtraction, because both of those activities are a sin. And you will not be saved from the punishment on account of any good that you did. So a person has to be very careful. And why is he saying this? Because God said it openly in the Torah, don't add and don't subtract. Because God understands that there's the religious emotion of people. They want to be better than the Torah. They want to add on. They want to go, if they think that God missed a point and they're going to create a new law, that's a sin. And then there's the people who are more into pleasure seeking. So they want to minimize the commands. And the conservative and reform Judaism, where they say, you could do this, or you could drive to the temple on the Sabbath. They start making all these loopholes and reducing the system. So he says, don't do that. Either any change at all means to say there's an emotion at play. Okay, and now he goes into the next verse, and he says the examples of what are the people like this. He says, do not be too righteous, and do not be too wise. Why should you be destroyed? So what does it mean, too righteous? So too righteous, he says, like the matter of King Saul, who had mercy on Agag. Agag was the king of the Amalekites, so he didn't kill him, and he went against God's command. So that's being too righteous. So you're doing something which is, you think in your mind, is a righteous thing. I won't kill the king. the enemy. Or he says, don't be too wise. What would that be an example of? Like certain people that they make, in Judaism, there's a thing called a neder, where a person takes an oath upon themselves, a swear, to, let's say, remove himself, like the Nazarite. So he takes an oath not to drink wine for a month or more. And he prohibits what's really permissible to him. So something like that, you should not be doing when there's no need. And that's going to restrain the instincts more than what's necessary, and that's going to be hurtful as well. So there's two cases of, what does it mean, don't be too righteous and don't be too wise? Meaning, when you go into that area and you are going against what your nature really is, or if you try to do something more than what God said, the person's trying to be too wise. For example, he gives another case. Wasn't me being too wise. He says, this is Rashi now, he says, don't make arguments that are foolish. For example, the Torah says, and I think we just read it, that if the Torah says that if you find one person dead between two cities, so then you bring the eagle, the calf, and you break its neck. The elders of the city come, and they measure the person for which city is he closest to, and the elders of that city come, and they atone for blood that was shed, and for some reason they have to atone, because evidently if there was a murder, that means the education of that city is insufficient, and there's some blame in terms of what is being brought about, what is being taught in that city, if it could produce a person of that nature. That's why God said to Abraham that if there'll be 10 righteous people minimally in these five cities, then I won't have to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. Meaning to say, if there would be enough of a potential that they could re-educate the people back to the right life, that's a minimum of 10 righteous people you need for these cities. So when you have that, then you have the potential for good. But sometimes it gets below the threshold, like in this case, where they ended up, there's somebody they found dead, and they didn't know who killed them. So what you do is you bring a calf in that case. Now, what would be an example of not being too wise? He says, Rashi says, that, well, if you find one dead person, and you have to bring this animal, and you break its neck as an atonement, so certainly if you find two dead people, meaning, don't make arguments that are not in the Torah. Don't try to use arguments that are not rooted in the right system of thinking. Because sometimes a person could use his intelligence, but he corrupts it. So that'd be an example of being too wise. In truth, he's not being wise at all. But since he's using the faculty of intelligence, even though he's abusing it, they call it being too wise. All right, Francesco, so those are two examples that they give. And it's very good what he says. He says, as well, don't be too wicked, the next verse says, 17. What do you mean, don't be too wicked? Meaning, even with somebody who deserves punishment, this is a Sforno, meaning the judges. So if they find somebody who's worthy of getting the 39 lashes, he has to get whipped 39, that's what's called makos. So that's one of the punishments that the Torah mandates for certain crimes. So Sforno says, even when you're doing this, be careful not to be too evil. What do you mean too evil? Do not become like a ruthless, even on a wicked person, more than what was mandated. Because the Torah says you give him 39 stripes and no further. Meaning, it could be a part of the person, a vicious part of the person. Everybody has viciousness. Luckily, most of us keep it at bay and don't value it. And you know, but again, every part of the person has a time and place. Otherwise, God wouldn't give it to us. But sometimes the person could even be a judge in the court, and he's the one that's administering the stripes, the whips onto the person. What can happen is that there's a certain enjoyment in that. The viciousness is coming out, and he may have a tendency to give one extra, or hit him extra hard, or whatever it is. So he says, don't do this. This would be considered a case of being too wicked. Even though it's not wicked to follow God's law, you have to give whips. You have to give the lashes. That's part of God's system. But since it is an act of aggression, so that's why it could come under the heading of evilness, even though it's something which you have to do. So that's the third case of not being too wicked. But what we'll still have to do is try to understand what's the theme over here that King Solomon is bringing out with all these cases. Don't be too this, don't be too that. What's the underlying, well, why does he have to tell us this? And of course he says at the end of 17, do not be a fool at all. Well, Doug, what word do you have for that at the end of 17? And then he ends up, you shouldn't die before your time. And he says,
it's fool.
Okay, don't be a fool. There, it's not too much. Any quantity of being a fool is bad. It is going to be no good. Evidently, the other ones have a measure which is proper. And what does he mean in that case, don't be a fool? So Sforno says, to turn away completely from being involved in your life, your physical needs, even if it's to be involved in Torah study. But to ignore your physical needs, then you're going to die when it's not your time. And that's how he ends off that verse. So if you do that, then you'll have neither success in the physical or in the metaphysical. You'll die before your time if you're completely, in a foolish state of mind, like certain people do today. They just, I'm just going to learn. They get into the state of mind where learning is the greatest thing, but they completely ignore the fact that they have a stomach and they have to eat. But they go and they say, I'm just going to sit in yeshiva all the time, and that's it. But that's wrong. That's not what the Torah says. So he's saying that there's certain extremes going on over here. And people try to fool themselves thinking that they're doing the extreme and they think it's really in the name of Torah. But that's wrong. King Solomon says openly. So therefore, what does he conclude? He says, it is good that a person should grab onto this, and also from that he should not release his hand. For one who fears God will bring out everything, meaning he'll be successful in everything. Okay, that's a very key verse. Take a look at 18. See if you can look at what he's saying carefully. Yes, Doug.
Does he say, at first glance it appears to be repetitive, good that you should take hold of this, and also from this you shall not withdraw your hand. But it strikes me that the first is actively getting into the things that I just told you. And the second is making sure that it's continual, that you don't just do it once, but that you're continually involved in those things that I just told you, not being overly righteous, overly wise, overly wicked, and so forth. Is that potentially what he's getting at?
Well, I mean, if he sense he can't be redundant, if he already said that don't be overly righteous, or wise, or wicked, and don't be foolish at all. So, what is the, these are pronouns, right? It says, bezeh and zeh, I mean, this and this. It's good that you seize onto this, and from that, also don't release your hand. So what are you understanding those things to be? What's the this and what's the that in the verse? You're saying it's what he just talked about?
I was assuming it was what he just talked about, but you just brought up a good point, because in the aggregate, 18 would be entirely redundant. I mean, it would be like saying, don't murder people, and then in the next verse say, be sure to keep that commandment.
Yeah. It's a shame they don't have the Sforno in English on this. He's just, he really is consistently, really hits the mark, in my opinion. I'll read you what he says. He says that a person should perform the essence in his strivings to inquire for himself an eternal life. That's the first thing that he should grab onto. And also from that, he shouldn't let go. What's that? For his strivings in the physical world. Do not release your hand. Meaning to say that he just said the person shouldn't be a fool, and he's going to just even be involved in study, Torah study, and that's the way. And he says, I don't have to work. I'm just going to do this. I'll be completely involved. And he hides behind the self-righteousness of Torah study, but he, you know, to justify his laziness, that he's not working, that he's not, you know, really pursuing something. So, but you see what's going on also is that he says that, what's this theme about? I mean, you have to ask yourself the question: if King Solomon is telling you, and this is the method that, you know, I keep on bringing out, so it's good to rehearse it. If he tells you not to do something, it's because we must have a disposition or a propensity to do it. So he says, don't be too righteous, don't be too wise, don't be too wicked. It must be because we have this, we're predisposed that we do go to the extreme. Because the reason why this is so is because an emotion, by definition, is like a magnet. And the closer you get to it, or the more you give into it, the stronger a pull it has. Because what happens is that there's a saying of the rabbis. The saying is, if man has a small limb, right? That's a euphemism for the reproductive organ. And he has a small limb. And if he starves it, it gets full. But if he feeds it, it gets hungry. And this is true with the other instincts too. Meaning to say that a person excites and arouses and satisfies any desire, what's going to happen is the taste of the desire, the satisfaction is something which the emotions enjoy, and they get attached to more. That's just the way we are. So the more you get involved in a certain type of a habit, a satisfaction, so the more you're going to crave it, like a drug. The less a person's involved in something, the more distant he is, the less of a hold it has on him, because he's now removed from the enjoyment, so the psyche of the person is not preoccupied with it. His mind is now allowed to go back into wisdom. And the more he's involved with the wisdom, the less he's involved in seeking gratification for any type of emotion whatsoever. So since that's the case, so you have the phenomena of extremism. And that's because when a person gets involved in an emotion too much, he gives into it more and more and more until he's going overboard on it. So if a person's getting involved in being too righteous, right? And again, getting a lot of feedback, so if anybody does not have the mute on, if you can please do that. Thank you. So if a person gets involved in any emotion, whatever it is, meaning the emotion could hide itself behind righteousness. That was what King Saul did. That's not what God said. God said, kill the king. Kill Agag, the leader of the Amalekites. He didn't. He let his mercy get involved. There, that mercy was no good, and that was the beginning of his downfall. That person can hide behind being wise, too. I'm going to be very wise. I'm going to be... he's letting an emotion of his own ego get in the way. He says, don't do that. Don't add to the Torah. Don't subtract. You have to follow the fact that God knows better. And this is perfect why the verse tells us in 18 that what you should do is really do what? You should grab onto this and don't let go of that. That means that there has to be a balance. The balance is that you're not getting too involved in your metaphysical life where you ignore your physical life. That's what Sforno says. You study, you live a life of intelligence, and you have the goal, the real essence, as he calls it, as being your eternal life, but not to the point where you completely abandon your need for the physical. That means you follow the way the world is designed. So you have to grab onto both worlds. That's what's the this and the that. You're grabbing onto both worlds. You can't ignore one over the other. Either way you go. Being too much of a hedonist means that the person is sinking himself into the physical and ignores his eternal life. That's equally, equally ruins the person. But what's the reason why a person should not do this? And what will help the person to stay on the right path? You read the end of the verse. For the one who fears God will bring out them all. So what does he mean, the one that fears God will bring it out? It means that he's not relying on his own decisions. That's where the extremism comes when a person makes his own calculations. But if he would follow the path that God maps out in the Torah, that means he fears God. He defers to God. What does God say? He knows better. So I will follow exactly what the Torah says. I'm not going to add. I'm not going to subtract. And if the prophet Samuel tells King Saul, kill the king, that's what you do. You don't make your own equations. That came straight from God. So you see a very good lesson here, that extremism is something which is... The person has this, is predisposed to do this. And most people do follow this way. If you look at the world today, especially the Jewish world, so you'll see this very polarized. You have people that are in black hats and beards and this type of a exterior because they're trying to satisfy that over-religious emotion. Then you got the people who are conservative, reform, and very loose, and they don't study at all. They're just into having their dinners. That's the big thing in their life, get-togethers, parties, office parties, whatever it is, and they do their holiday visits, twice a year, I'm a high holiday Jew, whatever it is. You rarely find the people that are right in between, which is the right life, where you're not trying to put on any type of a religious exterior to satisfy yourself and even more to satisfy your friends so you can think in your mind that you're getting approval from other people. So that's a very insecure person, but many people do that. I'm just trying to show you the extremism is there, the polarization is there, because it's emotionally satisfying. And people run to all these mystical, the occults and mystics and Kabbalists, because the emotion, the religious emotion, they're just giving in and not being guided by what God says in the Torah. Don't consult the dead. If people would just read the Torah, you would have an end of all these people that go to the graves and throw notes into the graves. And you'd have, your person would not feel compelled to go to the Western Wall. He would know that the Torah says that God can hear your voice from anywhere. But when you don't have the guide of God's words, and the person's not learning on a regular basis, so now the emotion takes over. Because there's only two paths you have in life. Either you're following your intelligence, or you're following your emotions. There is no third. We only have two wheels. So you either follow one or the other. So he's explaining over here how the person could be fooled. They could think that I'm being very righteous. No, that's just your emotion, your ego giving in, and you're hiding behind it so this way you can fool yourself. So you see, the real solution is that a person, first of all, he grabs onto both. He keeps focus on his eternal life, and he doesn't abandon his physical needs. He lives properly. He has the right balance. At the same time, he fears God, and therefore he looks to see exactly what God's plan is. And what did God map out in the Torah? And let me study that, and let me defer to him. And let me not try to be, more one extreme than the other extreme. And let me understand that's a corrupting thing. A person's aware of that. They could be on guard, and they'll start noticing it when it crops up, and they'll catch it before they get too involved in trying to be an extremist. Okay. Let me see if there's any questions or comments.
None here.
Okay. As you see how the very straight. He begins with the complete just system that God runs. So you may see somebody who's righteous, and then you have questions: why is he having such a tough life? It's God's justice. If it's not warranted, it will not be happening. Right, you have plenty of phrases by King David that, he says seven, calamities will befall the righteous, but they'll be saved from every one. What does it mean? It means a person's righteous and they're living in there. They're not sinning and they're completely righteous and they're living the good life. So why did the calamity start to begin with? See, that's because other people in the world have free will. So they can prepare an onslaught. God doesn't hold back anybody's free will. But he can thwart the course. Like it says, I think it's chapter 21 here in Kohelet. He says, or Mishlei actually, that this... streams of water is the heart of a king, and God can redirect the course any way he wants. So since a king in the world today, the presidents and the prime ministers, they're the ones that really have the most effect on how the world moves. So these people are in God's hands. Now he won't take away their free will, but he can limit their choices, knowing how they're going to select. And based on their own free will, they'll select. But God can manipulate the choices. In order that God, you know, the world goes on course the way God intends. So there's no distortion of the person's free will. But based on the choices that are presented to them, they'll go one way or the other. So, you know, a person who, you know, so getting back to a point over here. So why is it that a person is righteous? Seven calamities, meaning many calamities can befall him, but they'll be saved. Because since people have free will, they'll choose to hurt the righteous person because they don't like him. He represents the right life, and I want to live a hedonistic life or a sinful life, and he bothers me. The fact that he's being good means it's within my capacity to be a good person as well. But I don't want to because it doesn't feel good to my emotions. So I'll try to destroy the righteous person to remove that reminder of my own evils that I'm doing. So that'll be the seven things, the many times that certain things will come close to the righteous, but God saves them, meaning he can avert the course of that destruction, so the righteous person who doesn't deserve to be hurt will not. So a person is completely righteous, God can save the person very easily. All right? And the cases we can't explain, that's because we're not God. And but we see the system is just, and we see the goodness that God put into the world. So when we have certain questions, we can't answer everything. So that doesn't mean we say the rest of the Torah is unjust. No, the Torah system is perfect. It's just that as humans, we can't have all the answers. But there are cases where you can give answers, and that's what he's doing here when he says that I've seen in my life the righteous people that they cut off early. And explains, because, so Sforno gives one reason, because they did something wrong, so therefore they're getting punished here. Ibn Ezra has a different explanation. He says, and he says, it's very few times that you'll see a righteous person that's cut off early. What does it mean? It means that the person he's trying to be too righteous. He's fasting a lot. And then that'll hurt him. He may die because he's fasting too much. So that's another explanation, that he'll see a person is very righteous and he dies. That's self-inflicted. According to Sforno, it's something which God brings about for his own perfection. And Ibn Ezra also says conversely, and he says that, Ibn Ezra says that King Solomon continues in his theme, and he says there's also people that are wicked that have very long days because they're eating and they're drinking and they're happy, and this gives them a long life. Because there's no stress. They're just completely indulged. Okay. Mitzudas David says that the righteous, God will examine them and judge them. There's a saying of the rabbi, is like the strand of a hair, meaning God's very exact with the righteous because he holds them to a higher caliber, a higher standard. And if a person was not completely righteous, so then he may not be punished on something. But since God sees the person as very righteous, wants to perfect himself, so God gives him an opportunity, and he gives the punishment to the righteous for something that another person normally wouldn't get. Because he's giving the person, the righteous person, the opportunity to perfect himself in even a finer measure. All right? And he also says, don't be too righteous. He says on that, let me see. So Remember? Yeah, don't be too much of a righteous person. You need to prohibit on yourself. That's what's permitted. Like, for example, the Nazarite. So the Nazarite has to bring a sin offering at the end. So one explanation is he has to bring a sin offering because he prohibited wine, which was really committed to him. Okay. But I think it's a very valuable point in terms of the giving insight into ourselves to understand how extremism works, why it is a reality, what he's speaking about, and really the remedy to that is that the person doesn't follow his own thinking, but he fears God, and he looks and he gets guided by the Torah's words, not by some sort of a motivating emotion to parade a certain righteousness about himself. These are all emotions that everybody has, so we can identify with them. And it's something which, again, since people are insecure, most times people are looking for the approval of others, so they're going to be, even in their religious life, do things not because it gets God's approval, but because it gets the neighbor's approval. And that's bad. That's a real insecure person. The person has to be confident that he's following God, he's doing the right thing, regardless of what people say. Okay. All right. Any questions or comments? Okay. Anything from last week? We did with last week, idolatry. We wrapped that up. Any follow-ups on that? That's what I had to share with you today. So we'll pick up next week. We'll move on to 7:19 is where we'll start next week. All right.
That sounds good, Rabbi. Thanks very much.
Okay, my pleasure.
Good to meet you, Rabbi.
All right. A good week to everybody.
Thank you. Yeah, have a good day, everybody. Yes. Rabbi Moskowitz is not having his class, right, Doug?
That's correct. He is not.
Yeah, okay. So have a good week, everybody. Thanks, Rabbi.
Hey, my pleasure.
Thanks. Good week to you.
Thank you.
Thanks.